This is the Accidental Safety Pro brought to you by Vivid Learning Systems and the Health and Safety Institute. My name is Jill James, Vivid's Chief Safety Officer, and today I'm joined by Deborah. Deborah is a lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater in the Occupational and Environmental Safety and Health Department. And if any of you are listeners of the Accidental Safety Pro, you may have heard about Deborah before. In episode 19, we talked with Siobhan, and Siobhan is that one safety pro who actually knew since she was a kid she wanted to be a safety pro, and it's because she was raised by this guest today. Deborah is Siobhan's mom, and Deborah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So, Deborah, it's so great of you to agree to join us because I think Siobhan sort of set you up for this. Yeah, you should hear from my mom.
Right. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh yeah, you're so welcome. So like all of our guests, we want to hear your story. You've been in safety now for how many years?
Oh gosh. Okay. Since I was an undergrad.
Wow.
I did not start in the safety arena. I was really looking at, you know, maybe going into journalism when I was an undergrad, and took some journalism classes and said, okay, this is not exactly me. It just wasn't a good fit at the time. So I was trying to decide what I was going to do. And actually, I had a friend of mine, a friend of the family, actually, who was taking classes in the what was then known as the Safety Studies Department.
Okay.
And
what university was that at?
University of Wisconsin-Whitewater.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
UW-Whitewater. And he was taking classes, and one day we started talking, and I told him, I said, yeah, I think I'm going to change my major. And he said, he told me, he says, you might be interested in taking, you know, some safety courses. I think you would be okay. And I'm like, well, safety courses, what are you? And so he explained it to me.
Yeah.
And he told me, that, yeah, I think you could do it. He said, you don't seem to be afraid of men. And I'm like, okay.
What does that mean?
Right. You know, he said, you seem to be able to hold your own. So, so I was like, oh, okay. You know, so.
And everyone who's listening in the audience knows what Deborah's talking about, because the field has been classically
male dominated.
Yes,
right.
We're making headway,
right?
We still have a way to go.
Oh yeah. So I think I took Intro to Safety was the name of the course, and so I took Intro to Safety, and it was an introductory course, and I took a couple of other courses, and then I eventually took what was then known as industrial accident prevention, and I was hooked. I mean,
What hooked you?
I think it was just learning about, you know, what could possibly go wrong, how people can be injured in the workforce, and what can be done in order to, if not prevent the injuries, at least mitigate the injuries. And the more safety classes that I, you know, became enrolled in, the more interesting it became to me. And my friend was right, because oftentimes I was the only female sitting in class at that particular time. So, because we're talking the 70s here, the early 70s. So, But I wasn't afraid, and I could hear the whispers, and what is she doing in class? You know, mm-hmm. this is a girl. She's mm-hmm. not going to make it. You know, mm-hmm. this is going to blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it went from that to, hey, can we borrow your notes? You know, so as far as that was concerned. But uh-huh. I really became interested. It was different. And it's funny because I kind of think back from time to time. For example, when I was in high school and I decided that I wanted to take the drafting class, mm-hmm. And that hadn't been opened up really to girls mm-hmm. in high school. And I pushed, and my mom pushed because I really wanted to try it. Mm-hmm. And I was the only female in there. So I'm not, you know, I guess it was just something that was going to be, you know, mm-hmm. for me yes. as far as that's concerned.
You're a groundbreaker.
You know, as far as that's concerned. Mm-hmm. So, but I became very interested in that. And I'm happy that I stuck with it, you know, as far as mm-hmm. The field goes. So it's been rewarding for me.
Yeah. So you completed, you finished your degree at Whitewater.
Right.
Yeah. And what were you thinking the career might be like? What did you think?
Like I didn't
what sort of, yeah. What did you think you'd go in? Like where?
I didn't know. I had, I did my internship at a cannery, mm-hmm. Which I found very interesting. The person that oversaw my internship while I was there also was, and he was the safety director, but he was also involved in other sister plants, if you will. Yeah. And so sometimes he was there and sometimes he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And when he wasn't, because it was really almost like a one-man show as far as the safety department mm-hmm. is concerned. Mm-hmm. So I was the one that was on duty. And I, you know, it was a good experience. Everything from a gentleman almost having his eye put out because he was standing too close to a truck when they were removing a frozen lug nut, and it ended up hitting him just above the eye. And, wow. And here's little old me trying to convince him to that you need to go to the hospital. You have to go to the hospital. So everything from that to a person that lost part of his finger. So it was interesting. And I kept wondering, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? Right. So what I did was I lucked out after graduation mm-hmm. With my bachelor's degree. I had a friend that was working at an insurance company mm-hmm. In the engineer in the loss control division, and mm-hmm. he talked to his boss about me, said she just graduated, she's a female, and gave him some background information, and so I was invited to, you know, submit my resume, and mm-hmm. I ended up being a loss control representative at that point. So that was great.
Which means you got to see so many different work environments, I'm guessing.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was an eye-opener. Sometimes it was frustrating because, you know, there were, I had to really earn, my bones, so to speak, mm-hmm. Because depending on where I went to do audits and the like, that depended on also how I would be received, because mm-hmm. there were still men out there who, geez, she's a female, why is she doing this? I even had one that asked me, shouldn't you be at home taking care of the kids? Your husband should be doing this this job. So it was interesting.
Right. And you know, I'm thinking about the timeline that you're talking about. You know, you were in school in the 70s, you said.
Right.
And OSHA, the OSHA Act had just been enacted right. in 1970. So not only is this whole regulatory landscape brand new to employers.
Exactly.
You as a female are carrying that new message.
Right.
And, you know, for many of us as females in this industry, you know, we've experienced and heard what you're talking about.
Right.
I personally haven't been told that I am taking a job from a man and I should be at home because you know, I'm that much younger, but I have had what I did for you. Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I'm thinking. I am standing on your shoulders. Thank you. But I have had, the question of, or the comment, wow, when you came here today and I saw that you were female, I didn't think I'd learn anything from you, but you surprised me. Or, you know, are you married? Or, you know, those right. sort of, you know,
yeah.
been hit on in yeah. my professional job as a government regulator many times.
Right.
And so those are interesting waters to navigate when you're trying to do your professional job. So I'm right. thinking about you being young female, 1970s. Wow, that's a lot.
Right. So I worked there for a while and decided, you know, hey, I had taken a couple of classes towards my master's and decided to finish then my master's degree, but was always grateful for the time that I was out there in the field. Like I said, it was interesting. I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about being an engineer in the loss control division, you go to so many different establishments, mm-hmm. learn about the different hazards, and trying to convince those that are older than you to do things in a safe manner.
Yeah.
So you take what you learn, you know, as time goes on, and eventually then was asked to teach a class. It was supposed to be a class.
Okay. At Whitewater?
Right, at UW-Whitewater. Yeah. It was supposed to be a class because I was trying to decide, do I want to go back out in the field? Mm. I had had my second child. I had Siobhan, bless her heart. And what my children went through, yes, I did quite a bit of safety. And
we do want to hear about that piece of the story too, but yeah.
In the field, right. Yeah. And it was supposed to be for a class. I was actually asked by the then department chair, hey, why don't you maybe take a class, I mean, teach a class. You've taken you've taken all the classes we have to offer at that particular time, and the like, but the program has really grown since then. And it led to, hey, can you come back? And it was part-time at first and then full-time, and
How have you seen in the years that you've been lecturing at Whitewater, how have you seen the department shift and change and grow, you know, from the students' perspective, and what's the evolution been like?
Okay.
Because you've been around, the Whitewater's been around for a long time and very well regarded.
I know. Yeah. And I'm proud to say that. Yes, the program and the department has grown a lot. We used to be in the College of Education, and now we're in the College of Business. And we are, like I say, the classes that are available, I have told students over the years, you have no idea, those that are majors, for example, you have no idea how lucky you are. You should really feel proud in the classes that we are offering, because some of the classes we have now were not available to us when I was a student. Our department started out more in the education arena when you're talking about motor vehicles and the motor vehicle arena. And so over the years, we've gotten into more of the industrial side. We've gotten into the environmental side as well, and it's just great. It's just wonderful. So it has grown quite a bit. It has grown quite a bit, and so has the number of students that we have in our program.
And the diversity, I bet you've seen a shift, you know, since you were the sole female in the class.
Right. Oh yes, there are more. there are more women. It is still male dominated, you know, when you're talking about the arena as a whole. But we have had more females, and we're attracting more females into the program. And it's good to see that they realize that, yeah, you can do this too, you know, and it's a great opportunity. You learn a lot of things. You learn things in this field that you can take with you and just incorporate it into, you know, your life. You can incorporate safety into your life. And I like knowing what can possibly go wrong, you know, and what I can do to prevent that.
Right.
You know?
Speaking of incorporating it into your life, let's talk about how you raised raised the next generation of safety professional in your own home, which is so fabulous. So first of all, thanks for bringing Siobhan into the industry. But what was that like when you're, you know, a young mom and you're bringing? I know what it's been like for me, but I'm interested to hear from your perspective.
Right.
What did safety at home look like, and what did you transfer to
your kids? Well, I just thought it was really important. The more that I learned about safety and the things that can go wrong, not only in the workplace, but when you're talking motor vehicle, because like I said, we started out our department in driver's education. So what can go wrong when you're driving? What can go wrong in the home? You have to be very careful when you're talking about fluids and chemicals and all these things in the home. And I was trying to determine, okay, how can I pass this on to our kids? How can I let them know what some of the dangers are in the world without scaring the fajibers out of them and having it where they would be afraid to actually go, you know, enjoy life and go and go outside and play and things of this nature. So I just tried at each level of their age to explain to them as best I could without scaring them that these are the things that you need to do to be safe, okay? And
she did not
sometimes get the eye roll. Siobhan didn't tell you that part, but but sometimes, you know, I would get the eye roll, but they started to get it. They started to understand it, and I think it was because they saw some of their friends who ended up having accidents or things go wrong because they did not adhere to safety or listen to their parents and things of this nature. So yeah, we had fire drills, you know. we had fire drills, and they were taught to please pick up
stabbing your foot with your a Lego on the way out the door.
Things, you know. So if we had to leave in an emergency, we wouldn't be slip tripping and falling all over the place, and. Right, exactly. And I had latches, you know, on the cabinets that they could reach and things of this nature, depending, you know, on the age. And And somewhere in there, it seemed to stick more with Siobhan. She didn't seem to realize it at first, and she was trying other things, and we let her try, you know, other things, other interests. And then finally, I think I'll take a couple of safety classes, you know, I might be able to handle that. And it went from there. My eldest daughter, Kalinde, she decided to go a different route in the banking arena, which is fine, but at least she can be safe.
Right? Exactly. You set a good foundation for both of your daughters.
I tried. And it rubbed off on my husband too, I must say.
That's excellent. Yeah. I've done exactly the same with my son, and we have, you know, I have to say I haven't done a fire drill with him, but we talk about gathering locations. And we talk about gathering locations if there's, you know, a catastrophic incident in the community. We live in a community with a switching station and a rail yard. And every once in a while there is, you know, like some kind of accident where there might be a chemical spill. So we've talked about, like, where's our gathering location. And living in the Midwest, we also have tornadoes.
Right.
And so we have a go kit for that. We live in a place that does not have a basement, and so we have a plan for where we go, and then a kit that we grab to take with us, with the, you know, weather alert crank radio and the flashlights and, you know, the things the things that we would need and to leave quickly to get to a shelter. And so he knows that.
Right. I went over it. Yeah, I went over information not too long ago, especially when we were still having the really cold weather and the heavy snows, and went over winter safety with my students in class, and talking about those things, winter safety, and you know, kits for your car, kits for your home, the whole bit. You know, for that. So
And how to keep your exits open in your home when the snow is piling
right, up. Exactly.
So safety definitely a transferable skill to your home life.
it's as I used to tell my children, I said, you know, that those, when you learn and you practice, I say they become tapes in your mind, that during, you know, emergency situations or even if it's not emergency, but if you have to make, you know, a quick decision, I said they go off automatically. So I told him, I said, you don't have to think, you know, every day or before you get out of bed, oh no, what can go wrong? I said, but, you know, the tapes are there. And I've tried to do my job, and now it's up to you to listen to those tapes. I said, think about it as being a little angel, if you will, on your shoulder, and listen to that angel, because she's trying to tell you something, you know, as far as that goes. And some of the same thing I try to instill in my students. So
So Deborah, when you were getting started in the early parts of your career, did you have mentors, or how did you continue expanding your knowledge base, and who did you go to with questions? How did you make those, like, connections and networks with people?
Okay. Actually, they were the individuals that were in my department that I ended up actually working alongside, becoming a member in the department. Jerome Witherell, he was our department chair. We had Joseph Pease. I used to, you know, get information from and ask questions and try and get some guidance. Al Mims, who was a very tough bird to say the least. Mm-hmm. He was a no-nonsense kind of guy. that shot from the hip. And I said, mm-hmm. if nothing else, even though sometimes he could drive me crazy and make me angry, as a student mm-hmm. and as a colleague, you know, you would get a straight answer, you know, mm-hmm. from him about things. And there were others. So they were kind of like mentors to me as I was going through the program, yeah. because it could be tough sometimes if you were sitting in the yeah. classroom and yeah. and the only female. That could be kind of difficult, but I made it through and mm-hmm. Received good guidance from everyone in the department mm-hmm. when I was going through the mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. master's program. And like I said, next thing I know, I started teaching a class in 83. And then as time went on, mm-hmm. I had, you know, different individuals and places where I worked mm-hmm. that were mentors for me. And mm-hmm. it was just a great experience. It was a great experience. And at first I wasn't sure if I really wanted to teach. Per se, I was really looking to go back out in the field.
Sure.
But one of the things I liked about it was I was still sharing the information that I had learned, yeah. you know, my experiences in the classroom setting. And I enjoyed the students and I enjoyed all of the interactions with the students, and that part I really liked. And I also have to say that I liked the fact that I was close to home, because we lived in Whitewater as well, and I was close to home, and the kids were in school, and so, you know, if anything came up, I was boom, mom's there,
yeah.
you know, as far as that goes.
Yeah.
And I just kept up with my, learning, because I think this is a field, actually, I think any field you're in, but especially in the field of safety, you have to continuously mm-hmm. learn and grow and expand and learn to accept differences of each mm-hmm. generation of students, yeah. you know, because students change.
Yeah, right. So through your career, you know, in the past and up to now, are you a member of any specific organizations or sit on any boards that have afforded you different opportunities to either learn yourself or to, you know, engage with the next generation and mentor people?
Right. I'm a member of the Institute of Safety and Health Management, that's ISHM. And I have a certification through ISHM. I'm a certified safety and health manager.
Yeah.
Member of the National Fire Protection Association, the NFPA. And I'm a member of the Building Fire Safety yeah. Systems section of the NFPA. What else have I done? I've served as the interim director of the Educational Opportunity Program at UW-Whitewater.
Oh, what's that?
Basically, that's for minority students. Mm-hmm. It used to focus primarily on minority students and trying to those, especially those that might be first mm-hmm. year college attendees, university attendees in their families. Offering them, you know, financial assistance and advising and helping them mm-hmm. with their classes, things mm-hmm. of that nature at the time. So mm-hmm. I've done that. I've sat on numerous committees at the university, also UW level, University of Wisconsin level. So I've been busy since 83. I've been busy.
Yeah. Right. So of some of those memberships and places that you belong, have any of them, do you enjoy one more than the other, or look to some for your own professional guidance, so that maybe someone listening, you know, who hadn't thought about a membership to the NFPA or something like that. Yeah, what has that afforded you?
I like them all. I do. Mm-hmm. The NFPA, one of the advantages there is one of the classes I used to teach was the fire protection and prevention course. And the NFPA has a monthly journal for its members. And I love the fact that I could really keep abreast of what some of the problems were out there as far as fire prevention, fire protection, some of the different systems as far as fire suppression is concerned, what some of the problems were when it came to, you know, fires in confined spaces, et cetera. So, you know, any organization where, you know, I actually have journals and the like coming to me, I really see as an advantage. When it comes to Isham, for example, I like the fact that there's great contact with a lot of individuals out there, safety individuals out there that have different types of certificates in various fields. So one of those groups where if you needed help or you needed advice or you needed information of which you are not very clear on, you can get in contact with those individuals that you have out there. So yeah, I like them all. I like them all.
Yeah, interesting. You had mentioned the organization that you were part of, or maybe still are, for diversity in the is it at specific to Whitewater?
That was specific. That particular one was specific to Whitewater. Yeah. And that was quite some time ago for that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Well, I'm wondering, so you encouraged Siobhan, or at least you guided her to choose to choose a career in safety. Has that happened with any of your students by way of, have you encouraged any of them to teach like you are?
Right. I.
That's a lot of students, right, to look back on. Yeah.
No. I actually have a past student of mine. Her name is Tracy Buckley, and I actually have her as a colleague now our department. And I'm not going to say that, you know, because of Ms. Bowen, but she speaks oftentimes, you know, especially. We have a woman, women in safety day as part of a larger, gathering for the COBE, and that's College of Business. It's a larger gathering of students that come in, and, many of them are, from high school. We have quite a few that are minorities, and she always lets them know. She always lets them know that Ms. Bowen was an instructor of mine. She'll tell them she was in my class, and who else? Wayne Cole is another person. I think that was on the graduate level. I think I had him in my fire class, and was one of my students. He was what you call a non-traditional student. He was an older student. So yeah, but it feels good when I have students. I've had a couple already this semester who told me that they were going to switch their majors and become safety majors. And I said, oh, how many safety classes have you taken? And they said, you're the first one.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
So,
so
I've gotten that over the years, and students that will come back and introduce their kids to me. And I remember when I took you, Ms. Bowen, as an instructor. Oh, so
what an awesome legacy.
It makes you feel old, too.
Yes, I am getting to know that feeling quite well. When a shift happened in my head probably, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago, when I was thinking, gosh, I don't have a mentor right now. And I've always had at least 2 to 3 mentors in my career. And the people who've mentored me, well, they've passed away. And I was looking,
what happened to me.
Yeah. So I'm looking around the landscape going, gosh, I need a mentor. I don't have one. And then a colleague of mine said to me, you know, you are the mentor now. And I'm like, oh man, that's a lot of weight. That's a lot of responsibility. I kind of having a mentor.
I know. It's like, oh no, I grew up too much.
So we have to find different ways to, you know, get mentors for ourselves.
Right. It's just like in a family when you realize that a lot of your elders have passed away, and then you have family members that, like, cousins that'll call you and say, I need your advice, and you realize, oh shoot, am I an elder? You
know? Right.
Right.
Exactly.
As far as that goes.
Exactly.
But like I said, it's been a great learning experience for me. It's been wonderful.
Tell us more about this Women in Safety Day on the campus. What happens? And you said you bring in kids from the community. And so are you working to support the idea that safety is a career path within the STEM disciplines? Or how does that work?
It is we have groups from various high schools that will come in. And we have different what we call stations where they will actually learn about different programs, okay, in the business college. We're now part of that. And we let them know, you know, what we do in our department and give some demonstrations and let them ask questions, because what we find is, especially when it comes to occupational safety, that students more readily hear about all the other majors, you know, that are out there. But we are still trying to, you know, get the word out and get them to know that there is actually a major, you know, in occupational safety and what it's all about and things of that nature. So it's really great, you know, when they come in and they have all these questions. What is your, you know, major about? What is it that you can do? If you receive a degree in the major, of course, you know, is it something where you can make a good earning? And I go, yes, it is. You know, so as far as that goes, and that happens on an annual basis. We have that going on. So, yeah, it's really great. And especially since we have a lot of females that come in that day, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. 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 Oh, that's such a great thing that you're doing as a value to your community and to the students.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, so, we try.
Mm-hmm. Deborah, what you know, what advice do you have for anyone maybe just starting out in their career? Maybe they have an educational background in safety, maybe they don't. What sort of things do you think they should be leaning into, or advice you have for success in this career path?
You have to be steadfast. You have to accept responsibility, be professional, get the work on time. And you have to stay abreast. If you're going to be in the field of safety, no matter which field you decide to choose, if you're talking about being in loss control with an insurance company, if you're talking about being a safety director at a company, mm-hmm. Opening up your own loss control maybe firm eventually, or if you're talking about being a mm-hmm. student, you need to be studious and you need to continue learning in this field, and like I said, keeping abreast with OSHA, keeping mm-hmm. abreast with NFPA when you're talking mm-hmm. about their regulations, mm-hmm. their standards. Things of this nature. So that's what I would tell them. And things have changed, you know. It takes a little bit more to keep the interest of students nowadays. And so, mm-hmm. go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, as things, like you said, as things have changed and evolved, what have you learned from your students? Because I bet the information sharing goes both ways.
It does. What I've learned is they want their information more, it seems, electronically. We do have our graduate program, for example, is online. We find that more students like that, that they are able to get their master's degree online. Mm-hmm. We are in the process of getting our undergrad classes online mm-hmm. as well. They like a little bit more bells and whistles. They are not thrilled about everything being PowerPoints. So I'm a PowerPoint, but I throw in some video clips, and I also put things mm-hmm. on the board, and I also talk mm-hmm. To them and ask them questions, you know, so that they can mm-hmm. be involved and have yeah. more interaction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They like a little bit more detail when it comes to like assignments and mm-hmm. things of this nature. They want as much detail as possible. And I also have been learning in all of that, and especially with the interactions, what some of their fears are. In this world today, it's been kind of rough, you know, for them. I've even gone so far, I really didn't want to, but the last couple of semesters, even though the chance of them being involved in an active shooting event is very low, I thought it would be a good idea mm-hmm. to go over that information, give them an idea of what they can or what they should or should not consider, what can possibly happen, and things of this nature. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm learning what their yeah. fears are.
Yeah, right. Personal safety is a great concern to our youngest generation right now because it's been so much in their face.
Yes.
You know, and they were raised at a time yes. where not only were they practicing fire drills in their schools, but they were practicing lockdowns.
Right.
And that's something that you and I didn't experience when we were growing up.
But what I do tell them is, do not be afraid, go out there, live your, you know, live yeah. your lives and enjoy yourselves. You're young, don't stay locked in your house or in your dorms or, you know, in your apartments or whatever. I said, just be aware.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
of your surroundings and enjoy yourselves. I said, when I was in school, when I was an undergrad, I said, mm-hmm. yes, you have to be a serious student. And that should transfer mm-hmm. then over to be a serious worker. And you know, that type of thing, but you need to enjoy life as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. yeah. I'll share something with you to share with your students when they're talking with you about those concerns about their personal safety. Something that mm-hmm. That everyone, including your students and yourself, anyone listening to this podcast, can access. And I'm gonna do a shameless plug, but it's really absolutely coming from the heart.
No.
A couple of years ago, we wrote an online active shooter course that's offered free from our website, and it'll always be free, and anyone can access it. And the story behind it is my colleague and I, Barrett, were attending a safety conference, and there was a speaker from the East Coast who was speaking about active shooter response training, and he was so compelling in his discussion about why it was important and what was important to include in training, specifically brain research he was citing about how run, hide, fight is fine. However, we have this amygdala response in our brains to react, you know, with that the bear is coming at us like caveman days. And so we freeze. And so we can't decide to run, hide, or fight until we override that amygdala response to be able to do that, and how to train your brain to do that.
Right.
And so we were really interested in that. And together we wrote the content for this active shooter response course, which included that research on amygdala response, but it also includes information on situational awareness and how to just practice and train yourself when you're in environments to just be mindful of where are my two ways out of this. And so that once I can override that, I know where I'm going. So I can make a choice that I've already paid attention to, but it's not limiting me from living my life,
exactly,
like you said.
Exactly.
And while we were in the midst of putting that together, we approached one of our coworkers at our company at Vivid, who's a survivor of the first school shooting in U.S. history in Moses Lake, Washington. And we asked him if he would please share his story so that we could have a testimonial and a story that went along with the course. And he graciously agreed, as well as his teacher from that time, which is a junior high teacher, who stopped the shooter that day. And so the two of them tell their story throughout the course. And what we learned from one of the many things that we learned from my coworker, Chris, who tells his story, is what they were thinking when they were kids at that time and what gunfire sounded like. He said, you know, we heard these noises in our school and we all thought it was dogs barking. because they didn't have a framework in their mind for what real gunfire sounded like versus Hollywood gunfire and what you'd hear on TV in a movie. And so we have a listening exercise in the course so that people can differentiate that so they can hear those sounds in a safe environment.
Oh.
And the course is what we call G-rated. It's not meant to scare anyone. And so it's safe to share with kids. It's safe to share, you know, with faith communities and with your family and friends and certainly with your students. And yeah, and so that's something, yeah, it's called Active Shooter Response Training, and it's on our website, and anyone can have access to it at any time. Yeah, so you can use that with your students.
To it, that's great. Yeah, I try to get, you know, through. I don't spend a lot of time on it because I don't want to scare them, but I did spend enough time, and like I said, let them ask, you know, as many questions as they wanted to ask, and took them around the building, you know, that we're in Highland Hall, and gave them an idea of where their exits were. And I said, no matter what building you may be in on campus, or if it's downtown or wherever you are, to just be cognizant and try and identify, like you say, at least two exits. But it takes practice, you know, like anything else. And what saddens me, and I told them that that I'm really sorry to have to feel like I need to have this conversation, you know, with mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. But we live in the times we live in, so what can you do, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. And it's a powerful conversation, and one, like you say, it doesn't have to make people think that they can't live their lives and be joyful. It's just like, let's build this into our fabric of paying attention to other things that we'd be paying attention to in our lives. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Great tips, Deborah, you know, being steadfast in your work, whether as a student and being professional and staying current. You know, I think that's one of the things that safety professionals, really can struggle with, is like when there's so much information out there, how, you know, how do you approach staying current? And, you know, I think it really depends on where you work and, right. you know, kind of what the discipline is, where you are, and which right. resources or sources you should be paying attention to. And
right.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And having a mentor, you know, yeah. is very beneficial as well, whether you're talking about, you mm-hmm. know, on the job, or even if you're talking about an older student, if you're still a student, right. an older student that can tell you, right. you know, what this class is about and what that class is about and things of this nature. But they need to develop mm-hmm. the skills that will make them, when it comes to students.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are those successful. Skills? What are those skills? You started out as a journalism
writing
major,
skills
right? Writing
is also, yeah, writing skills, right. Writing skills and being able to verbalize your thoughts and being able to speak and to those individuals mm-hmm. that may be of a higher level, if you will, than you are in the company, and doing what you're supposed mm-hmm. what you're supposed to do, and realizing that everything is not going to come with bells and whistles. That's, you know, that's just not going to happen. So you have to make sure that you have focus. And mm-hmm. when you do get bells and whistles, be happy, you know.
Right. Well, you know, I think that's a good point. The bells and whistles part, you know, the safety profession and the tools, if you will, the 21st century tools that are afforded to so many other disciplines, safety is kind of behind the curve in many respects. And we have a ways to go, and many of us are working to shift that for the safety profession, but that's a good point.
But yeah, but and then when it comes to those that teach, trying to be relaxed, letting the students know that I don't know everything, but
and you know where to look.
I know a lot. And, you know, right, exactly. If there's some, and that's what, you know, getting them to realize that's what you need to do. If you don't know, you say you don't know, but you go out and you find out.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to keep, you know, keep abreast. So I try to have, I let them know that I want a relaxed class. I do not want them so relaxed that they jellyfish out of the chair. Or that, you know, their chairs, or they hold, you know, their own little conversations while I am lecturing a class or asking questions, that I am approachable, and but you know, utmost importance is treating me with respect. I will treat you with respect. You know, I expect you guys to do the same, you know, with your peers in the classroom. And you learn those things so that when you go out there and you do get a job, you realize that you get respect by earning it. And you should, you know, you should do so. You should work at it. So,
Good tips, Deborah. You know, I think safety professionals, by and large, you know, when I'm doing onboarding with our employees and they're asking about what safety professionals are like, and and I said, you know, they almost always have these really big hearts for humanity. Like, they really care about people, or they wouldn't be in it.
Right, exactly, exactly. And you have to care, you know, as far as that goes. And I think we all do. And I think that's why we stay in this profession.
Yeah, along with having an inquisitive mind. You know,
exactly.
I think that's another trait of many safety professionals, is we have this want for learning more. And we like the fact that our profession is sort of, there's always something new around the next corner that you didn't know.
I'm getting some updated information. I've been looking at more details as far as things like suppression systems and the like. I am a big advocate of suppression systems, those things that can put out a fire quickly to save lives and things of this nature. So I'm a little behind in my NFPA journals, and I saw an article. So that's the next thing I'll be taking a look at.
That's the next thing that you're you heard it here. Deborah is still just getting started, which is so great for our profession. Deborah, thank you so much for being with us today, and really thank you so much for placing your hand on this career and raising the generations of safety professionals that you have, including in your own home.
Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed the session.
Very good. Very good. And thank you all so much for joining in today and listening. And thank you for the work that you all do to make sure your workers, including your temporary workers, make it home safe every day. And special thanks to Will Moss, our podcast producer. You can listen to all of our episodes at vividlearningsystems.com, and you can find that active shooter response class there as well. Or you can subscribe in the podcast player of your choosing to find the Accidental Safety Pro, and you can also find us on YouTube. If you have a suggestion for a guest, including if it's you, please contact me at social@vividlearningsystems.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.